There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the Fangirl Zone.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Talk on the Fangirl Zone, a podcast where we discuss shows on the Sci-Fi Channel. I'm Steve.
And I'm Sean Fangirl S, and today we'll be discussing episode 4 of, hopefully, season 1 of Revival.
Better be.
I mean, I know it's early in the season, but tell me something.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, no ratings.
This is what I hate. It's like, do we wait? Do we just assume they're going to do something and just say, it's fine. So many people love these characters. Let's do it. We don't know.
Yeah.
So we have episode 4, Run Along, Little Lamb, which that title makes me think bad things are happening.
Yep.
A new mandate against revivers emerge while M's memories trigger a violent confrontation with devastating results.
That's an understatement. So, Revival Episode 4, Run Along, Little Lamb, kicks the overarching narrative into high gear as the floodgates open on the M murder case. We get some much-needed answers, while new questions take center stage. You say aliens? For example, if Aaron merely knocked M unconscious, who actually killed her? Also, who took out Aaron, shot Dana and M? Run Along, Little Lamb is another entertaining outing that delves deeper into the mystery at hand. We open with Nithia sleeping on her couch. She wakes, hearing someone in her home. She assumes it's Aaron. However, we see a figure in black, complete with matching leather gloves, rummaging through Aaron's office. Said person uncovers a flash drive and pockets it. They zip past Nithia, who jumps back in fear. Then May finds the flash drive on the passenger seat of her car. After this, we cut to a room with newspaper clippings regarding the Rose Blackdeer's death. If you recall, we learned in the pilot that Dana worked on that case. Camera zeroes in on a bottle of oxycodone prescribed to him. The person who stole the flash drive from Aaron removes their ski mask. It's Jesse Blackdeer, the man who came back to life in the incinerator at the Cretorium.
Yeah, that was all sorts of creepy and, like, I don't want to see that part again, but...
Yeah.
Later, Nella discovers M's phone on the ground outside her bar. M and Rhodey are at Dana's house. Okay, so she threw her phone but still ended up over there.
Yeah.
Dana emerges in her uniform. Naturally, the big sister, she's suspicious of Rhodey. Dana whips out M's phone and wondering why it was discarded. I love that she looked at her and was like, what is going on here?
Yep.
And yet, the conversation pivots to Blaine. M discloses her memory of him being on the bridge that night when she died. Okay, gets a little interesting.
Yep.
And Dana decides to confront Blaine herself. She makes M promise to steer clear of him. Oh, of course, that's going to work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, M is a cypress. Cypresses are going to cypress.
Yep.
Very Winona feel. Just throwing that out there again. She and Rhodey trail Dana to Blaine's towing business, and Dana questions Blaine. Yes, he was on the bridge, but he didn't kill M. Oh, yeah, because he's going to be like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, then no way.
Blaine recounts at night he was called to tow a vehicle near the bridge. He noticed M there, and that she seemed very high. Then he left with said vehicle and took it to Alonzo's. That's it. M and Rhodey appear. M decides to conduct her own interrogation. Blaine assumes she saw an explosion that night, a bright light that lit up the sky. M was in close proximity to it, and Blaine still vehemently insists she must have witnessed it.
Yeah. Dana and Rhodey urge Homeboy to back up when he gets too close, looming above M. Then he recites some religious zealot rhetoric before retreating to his lair. After this, Dana impresses the importance of doing this the right way. She must solve M's murder by utilizing the proper channels and adhering to protocol. M understands. So she said.
I'm like, just because you understand it don't mean you're going to listen.
Nope. Next, we hear an announcement regarding revivers. Their IDs will now bear a stamp identifying them as revivers. We see a pawn shop put up a no revivers allowed sign. Later, Wayne ends up on Rhodey's doorstep. He's surprised to see M there. Wayne reveals that he's tracking down any revivers that have a special ID stamp. He's not thrilled that M is seeing a reviver. Yeah, wait till he finds out she is one.
Right.
He asks for Rhodey's ID before stamping it himself. Then Wayne urges M to attend her first anger management session, which is the following morning. He claims M is lucky that the woman she headbutted in Nella's bar isn't pressing charges. Wayne ensured M got off with a slap on the wrist due to his status as sheriff. After Wayne leaves, M makes a beeline for the bathroom.
This was kind of disturbing, this whole, like, way that they went with the show here.
Right.
Because it was very much, like, in the early years.
Yeah.
Going back when they would not let certain kind of people in. It was very segregated. And then when they were doing the stamps, I'm like, oh, I do feel very much like this was going a really bad way. Like,
yep.
It had me where I wasn't just mad. I was like uneasy about the whole thing. Like, oh my God, where is this going?
Yeah.
So it kind of had me that way the whole time. I don't know about you.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we have Cooper and Jordan hanging out in the tent in the woods. And they're listening to the radio and suddenly it cuts off. Jordan hears strange noises seemingly emanating from the woods. A light flickers outside and she reaches out her hand to touch what looks like fingers or claws or hooves or something. Might not be of this world. And it's touching the tent, but Cooper brings Jordan back to reality, so apparently Cooper couldn't see it.
Right.
At the Cypress household, Dana and Abraham have a coffee and a chat. Abraham needs advice regarding Wayne. How does one deal with him? Well, I don't know if anybody can deal with him.
Right.
Abraham realizes that Wayne has the governor's ear, not to mention how Wausau is treating revivers as unconscionable, inhumane, and I agree with him.
Yes.
Gotta love the striking real-life parallels as U.S. ostracizes, discriminates, and strips rights away from certain marginalized groups. Anyway, Dana tells Abraham that Wayne loves to feel helpful. Keep him busy.
Huh, yeah.
There's a thought. He thinks what he's doing is right, even though singling out and potentially rounding up revivers like cattle isn't the way to go about it.
No.
After this, Dana heads upstairs to ensure Cooper and Jordan are in bed. Jordan admits she doesn't sleep anymore, which garners harsh judgment from her parents.
Of course. Dana reassures Jordan that she's not a freak at her house. Jordan is perfect the way she is. Ibrahim eavesdrops on Dana's chat with Jordan and Cooper, and he smiles. Then Ibrahim asks Dana if she'd like to go out to dinner. Look at those cute kids. Later, Mayor Dillich's wife, Diane, informs Wayne that she's a reviver. She asks him to look the other way for her, as it were. After all, she and the mayor watched Dana and him quite a bit in the wake of Patty's death. The Dilliches did a lot for him. Wayne refuses to let Diane fly under the radar, insisting he can't make exceptions for anyone. Next, M arrives for her first anger management session with Nithya, who's a therapist. Of course she is.
Right?
Nithya admits she knows that M is a reviver. They chat about this for a spell. How does it make M feel? At one point during the session, Nithya goes into an unexpected coughing fit. M apologizes, recalling her late mother's cancer battle. Nithya is fighting it too. She remarks that M's mom must have been a strong woman.
I feel like things are going to take a weird turn with this. Like, she
yes.
Feel like it's her mom. You know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Dana marches into Alonzo's auto shop to chat with the proprietor, Alonzo. Alonzo is still quite analog in his practice and refuses to use a computer. Yeah. Based on all that paper and scrap paper, that's probably not the best idea, especially for your taxes.
No.
He corroborates Blaine's alibi. He did bring in a towed vehicle around 10 p.m. Alonzo reveals that Jane Anderson rented the vehicle on the night of M's murder before Blaine towed it. Dana searches the car, finding a parking stub for Wausau General Memorial Hospital on December 18th, 2008 at 6:47 p.m. Well, let it be known that I was unaware this was taking place so long ago, and I could not figure out why everybody had flip phones.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we're in the 2000s. We're in the 2020s right now, 2025, obviously. Did not realize we were in 2008 in this. So
no, that was a shocker.
Yes. Meanwhile, Rhodey gives M her first massage, which, you know, after finding out we're in 2008, that's just kind of like okay.
Yeah.
Well, that leads to some smooching, and Rhodey insists they don't have to go further, but M wants to. But while they're kissing, M has a flashback to the night on the bridge. She recalls someone chloroforming her as they drag her away. This person had on that wedding band. At the same time, we have Blaine recording his radio show. Are we thinking that Blaine had on a wedding ring? I don't remember them mentioning a wife, but...
No.
But we do hear him spew some hateful rhetoric about revivers as one reviver, a sweet-looking older woman, happily exercises during class. Afterward, two of Blaine's bros attempt to block the woman's passage, and they decide to intimidate her. Really not feeling this.
No, not at all. Later, Dana chases down another lead at the hospital. A nurse reveals their patient logs from December 18th. Dana realizes that Nithya was receiving chemo around the same time as what's on the parking stub. The nurse shares that Nithya most likely went home around midnight. So if the car was dropped off at 10 p.m., that means Aaron is using his wife's chemo as an alibi. Dana knocks on Aaron and Nithya's door, however, no one answers. As she leaves, we see the curtains part from the inside. Meanwhile, Em and Rhodey visit a pawn shop with the mysterious wedding band. The owner is the one who refuses to serve revivers. Rhodey claims he left his ID at home, so Em shows her, which doesn't have the reviver stamp. She asks the man if he has sold a wedding band to anyone lately. He reveals that one customer emailed him claiming he needed to replace his wife's wedding ring. Pawn shop owner also shares the email address of this customer. It belongs to James Anderson. M tells Rhodey that James is Aaron's TA. Uh-oh. Oh,
great.
Yeah.
Speaking of Aaron, he finds his office in disarray. He discovers the flash drive is gone. He collects his contacts and gives them a stern talking to for being in the house while Nithya was home. Okay? Big question mark there.
Yeah.
Aaron tells the person on the other end that he kept up his end of the bargain. Then he reminds them that I can take you down before hanging up on them. That's probably not the way to go, but...
No.
I guess to each their own. Later, Aaron burns some incriminating documents in the fireplace. That's always great.
Yeah.
You're not taking anybody down. You're burning everything.
Yeah, you're about to go down.
Right. Nithya asks him what he's doing, and he urges her to go to bed. And he's claiming, well, don't worry, I'm taking care of it. That always makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Then Em recalls an intimate moment between her and Aaron as she gives herself a badass haircut. Seriously, I try to trim the ends of my hair and it looks bad. Like, I need to see a professional.
Yeah.
No. I don't want to look like, you know, that bowl cut that I had when I was a little kid. I don't know. It was all the rage when we were little. Probably because Right. Everyone wanted to be a hairdresser. All yeah. Our parents did. I don't know about you with your kids. I had the bowl cut, though.
Yeah. Not my kids.
Oh, well, see, your wife had style, obviously.
Yeah.
After Em's sick punk upgrade, Em insists on going to confront Aaron whether Rhodey likes it or not. And, well, she leaves him behind. That was probably not the best of ideas, because we still don't know what the heck is going on.
Right. Elsewhere, Ibrahim arrives at the Cypress house to pick up Dana for their date. Then Andrew and Adam call their brother Anthony, who's in Hell's Kitchen, New York. Anthony is on a payphone. Anthony informs them that his boss is thrilled by the new business opportunity in Wausau. He wants the Chick brothers to run it. However, Anthony doesn't trust Andrew and Adam to oversee operations without him. So they must smuggle Anthony back to Wausau.
I'm sure that'll be easy.
Yeah. He asks Andrew if he still plays poker with that piece of shit Irish cop. Anthony urges Andrew to overpay said cop and get him back on side. Then one dude gets impatient while waiting to use the payphone. Anthony beats the snot out of him while he's still on the phone with Andrew. Anthony hangs up the receiver, which is covered in blood. At the same time, Aaron is on the phone with his contact again. He urges this person to ensure Nithya is taken care of.
What?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dana instructs Ibrahim on where to go, although the latter would rather trust the GPS. Dana gets a text from Aaron ordering her to go to the woods behind Pacer. He'll tell her everything. So Dana directs Ibrahim to drive to the location.
Ah, yeah, I'm sure everything's going to be just perfect.
Yeah.
Next, we see M confronting Aaron in the woods. M demands to know the truth. Aaron insists he didn't mean to hurt her. M starts choking him. Kind of a valid response. I'm just throwing that out there.
Can't blame her.
At the same time, Ibrahim stops the car near the tree line. Dana whips out a gun. This is all standard first date fare, right? I mean, she's dressed to the nines with a gun somewhere.
Yep.
Dana leaves him there. M is choking the life out of Aaron for a few moments before releasing him. And Aaron claims he didn't kill her. He took her from the bridge, but he didn't commit murder. He apologizes. Is this just like trying to be like, I didn't kill you, the drugs killed you? You know?
Yeah.
Suddenly, someone shoots Aaron from a distance and he dies. Dana arrives after this and she's checking Aaron's pulse, realizing he doesn't have one. She asks M what happened, then another gunshot. But at this time, Ibrahim hears it. But unfortunately, the bullet flies through Dana and M. Unfortunately, only one of them is self-healing reviver, and it's not Dana. M takes Dana's gun and fires at the shooter. The bullet strikes their right arm, and they do cry out. But M starts screaming for help, reassuring Dana she'll be okay while trying to staunch the wound. Someone save our Winona.
Yes. Did not expect that, that's for sure.
No! I'm like, oh my god, what episode is this? Are they killing her off?
Yeah. With six episodes left, they better not.
They better not do this to us.
No. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com. Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are a few other revival podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and we do hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
You can check everything out at fangirlzone.com. We have a myriad of podcasts. I'm sure you'll find something else you enjoy. Or you can let us know what you think we should do next, because, I mean, obviously we seem to be on a sci-fi comic book run with these, and I'm all for it. So you can also contact us, as Steve said, at contactus@fangirlzone.com, or find our page and reach out to us basically everywhere. We want to hear from you. I love the tinfoil hat theories, and I still want to know who has read this comic book and what you think of it. So for this episode of Sci-Fi Talk,
I'm Steve. I'm going to shove this protocol right up your ass.
And I'm Sean, Fangirl S. And until next time.